This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored!
Smith corks one into right down the line! It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinals fans, and welcome to a very special edition of Ruffled Feathers right here on Two Birds on a Bat, coming to you from the Patio Studio. Patio is the original party place for St. Louis Cardinals fans everywhere. Since 1998, pre- or post-game, Patio's is the place to be. This show is brought to you by Innovated Companies with a special thanks to Randy Green. Residential, commercial, or industrial, Innovated Companies has you covered. Don't forget the 15% discount for all military and first responders. The construction, electrical, or heating and cooling teams are ready to tackle any project. That's our good friends at InnovatedCompanies.com. Well, folks, today is opening day around Major League Baseball. Tomorrow, the Cardinals open their season up against the Pirates at home. Here to talk about that and to go back in the past a little bit is a guy who played a little bit of baseball himself. That is a seven-time All-Star World Series champion. The Cardinals' former left fielder, Matt Holliday, joins me on the show today. Matt, it is great to talk to you, and you're looking good.
Thank you. Yeah. Great to talk to you. I am in Atlanta with my boys. Thankfully, I've gotten to watch some amateur baseball as we anxiously await the arrival of the MLB season. So I am excited about the season kicking off tonight. I'm doing well, and I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, been looking forward to talking to you. And it was I've got a couple things that I got to discuss a little bit later, but one of them might be a little bit uncomfortable because it has to do with the cat, but I've got a couple clips of him, so we'll get to that here in a bit. What is Matt Holliday up to these days?
So I am the volunteer assistant at Oklahoma State. My brother is the head coach, for those that don't know, at Oklahoma State baseball. My brother is the head coach, and I am the volunteer. I do hitting. He and I do hitting together, and I coach the outfielders, and so that's been a good kind of transition for me, from playing. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time with my kids. The good thing about coaching in college is it's not quite as time consuming as Major League Baseball. And also I'm the volunteer and my brother's head coach. So I tell him, you know, I can pretty much do whatever I want. You know, I've got job security, but,
right.
I spend a lot of time with my boys, and my daughter, and coaching baseball. I'm spending time with college kids. I'm trying to help them reach their dreams. I'm kind of learning some of the coaching ins and outs of how to coach different players and different kinds of players. So it's been a good past. Outside of obviously the world pandemic and some of those things that have been rough on everyone. I've enjoyed the last, you know, 6 or 7 months kind of doing a new thing.
That actually leads into a question we got on our Patterson Tire and Service text line. So I'll just go right to that. And it says, and this question comes from a friend of mine, Nate, goes by @HolyL on Twitter. What are the long-term consequences of a season lost for these kids in college?
Well, hopefully not much. I think, you know, the NCAA, at least for us, I know that some of the schools have said that they will not, you know, honor the seniors coming back because they don't want to pay their scholarship. But I know for us, our five seniors are going to come back and the school is going to pay their scholarship, whatever they were on. Baseball is a little different. obviously a lot of, you know, we have to do partial scholarships just because we're only allowed 11-7 for such a big roster. You know, I think that the seniors coming back, I think outside of a bit of a roster logjam is what I think we're going to have a little bit of for these next couple of years with the seniors coming back. And then we have a whole nother freshman class coming in. There's going to be a bit of a talent logjam. I think the junior college baseball is going to take a talent step forward. But I think outside of being in a year older, for some of these seniors, I don't think much. I don't think it's going to be a bad thing, ultimately. But for those kids, obviously, that the schools aren't going to offer then the opportunity to come back and replay their senior year, yeah, they missed out on a lot, I think. So hopefully if those kids want to play baseball, I think they can go anywhere else and play and be eligible right away. So I think these kids will be fine. Like I said, maybe it'll give them an opportunity to finish their education. Some of them maybe that otherwise would have gone and played pro ball and hadn't quite finished their degree. So maybe that'll be a good thing.
Elle got greedy because she kept adding questions on top of this. The next one is, what advice would you give those college students trying to stay conditioned during a lost season like this?
Well, I mean, now that they have some of these college leagues, we're able to get up and going, and I think they need to go play. You know, a lot of our guys, we were able to find places around the country for some of these college kids to go get at bats. And you know, in the summer, if they can get, you know, 60 to 100 at bats, that would be great. And then they can come back in the fall, and hopefully, you know, as of right now, at least for us, we plan to come back into school and test our kids and get a protocol in place that we can have a normal fall practice. And we'll try to make up for lost ground on at bats. We'll probably do more scrimmaging than usual and try to get them live at bats as the conditioning of our pitchers will allow. But I think that, like I said, if you can go and play and then, you know, just taking care of yourself, you know, as far as, you know, diet and training, I know it's been a good opportunity for my son who's 16 to kind of get in the weight room, consistently and put on some muscle for the first time. He plays basketball and is always doing something. And, for him to be able to kind of have this time to settle into a bit of a weight program, it was beneficial. He's stronger and I think has kind of gotten the itch for seeing, what being stronger will do for his game, especially at that age. So that's been good for him. And I think college kids are the same. The better the conditioning, the more better condition they're in typically translates to playing at a higher level.
So does your 16-year-old think he can take dad yet, or is he at that point?
Oh, no. He's a long ways off. He's pushing 170.
Oh boy.
You know, okay. I mean, he's not quite built like I am as far as, you know, just thickness. He's ripped, but he plays shortstop and he's thinner than me. So, he's not quite there yet.
Okay. Well, he's got a better head on his shoulders than I did because I thought I could. My dad was about 4 inches taller than me and weighed quite a bit more, so I didn't test that.
He hasn't tested it. Maybe he does. I need to ask him, but I don't think so.
I don't know if I'd invite it or not, but anyway, my 9-year-old's already there, I think. Matt, I want to go back a little bit here to your time with the Cardinals, and I know that, you know, it seems like throughout the ownership era of the current ownership, DeWitt, I've enjoyed mostly seeing not only homegrown talent developed, but once in a while we get that player in that name, and you can't believe they're in a Cardinals jersey. I'll go all the way back to Mark McGwire and Will Clark. We had him briefly, and we had Larry Walker. Scott Rowland came on board, and then we've got, you know, we got Matt Holliday, just that trade. And I know the year before that, the offseason, there were rumors flying around that the Cardinals may have been involved in seeking you out. But just take us back to that time you learned that you were traded to the Cardinals, and what were you feeling at that point in time?
Yeah, like you said, I actually had you know, some friends in the Cardinal organization, and then I had one of my best friends is the video coordinator for the Rockies. And so that, like you said, the off season before that trade actually happened, I had some inside information that, you know, the Cardinals, the Rockies were looking at a deal for both from both the Oakland Athletics and the St. Louis Cardinals, and the GM at the time, Dan O'Dowd, was considering the offers from both teams, and that he was going to make a decision on one or the other. So obviously, you know, you get excited that maybe that, you know, getting traded to the Cardinals at that time they were very successful. And like you said, most years the Cardinals are right in it for a playoff position. At that time, the A's were kind of young and rebuilding, talented, but still not competitive as far as a division goes. And so obviously I was super excited. One of them to obviously pick the Cardinals and thought for sure when I looked at the talent, I mean, I was, you know, you should ended up being wrong. I mean, probably they got Carlos Gonzalez and Houston Street. But when I looked at the talent, I thought, well, for sure, cause I didn't know anything about Carlos Gonzalez. But at the time I thought, well, surely he's going to take the Cardinal offer. And, you know, ends up, he didn't. I ended up in Oakland. Fast forward, we don't do well in Oakland. We had a veteran, they signed a bunch of veterans and they got hurt and we ended up, you know, just kind of not really winning many games. But, you know, then the rumors started swirling again that the Cardinals were after me. And as trade line, you know, kind of approached, you know, you heard, like I said, I kind of heard from some different people in the Cardinals that knew the Cardinals organization that they were trying to make that happen. And so when it happened, I was in New York and we were playing the Yankees and got wind kind of oddly. The hotel didn't have very good, you know, service, and I couldn't get the call, and people were trying to get a hold of me, and ended up finding out kind of late, kind of weird. Finally, Billy Beane got a hold of me, and then, you know, sort of the next thing you know, me and my family are scurrying in the hotel to pack our stuff up and get on the train. We got a ride to the train. Next thing you know, we're on a train to Philadelphia. Basically, we get to Philadelphia. A car picks me up and takes me to the stadium. Another car takes my family to the hotel. And I'm in uniform, you know, 30 minutes later doing a press conference. And 30 minutes later after that, I'm taking batting practice. And you know, a couple hours after that, I'm in the lineup batting fourth behind Albert Pujols and ended up getting four hits. And it was an amazing day. It was a crazy whirlwind of experience. But, you know, one that I'll never forget. I can remember it vividly to the detail. As I sit here today, probably as much as any day, you know, you have is just how that day unfolded and what that looked like. You know, like I said, I can remember sitting in the car on the way to the train, and I get a call from CJ Cherry, who's was the traveling secretary at the time, and he puts Albert on the phone, and Albert's like, "Get over here, you're batting fourth tonight," and you know, just some cool things like that that memories that you have that are pretty awesome. So, you know, basically get over there. We do really well to close out the season. Make great friends, feel a very connected vibe to the organization and to the team. Get made an offer that was fair and ended up signing back and sort of, you know, the next 7 years were a big part of my life. So I guess in a small nutshell, that's kind of how it happened and what that looked like. But I was looking for an organization that was competitive, that would be win year in and year out, and you know, landed in a tremendous spot and made lifelong friends. And it was a tremendous blessing to be in St. Louis for seven plus the 2 months.
What was it like playing with a guy like Albert all of a sudden? You know, his first 11 seasons in baseball were just incredible with the Cardinals, but joining a team like that, what was it like all of a sudden you're brought in to protect him essentially in the three spot, but what was the experience like playing with a player like that?
Well, I mean, it was, you know, you see him from afar and you appreciate his greatness. I guess watching SportsCenter and Baseball Tonight and just kind of from afar and reading the stats, but you know, getting a chance to bat after him and be on deck and to see the quality of bats and the clutch situations and just how you know, tremendous he was and is still a great player was awesome. And just watch him work. And I was always I tell people, you know, when I first got there, like his defense at first base was tremendous. Like he would take chances at first base on throws and do things. And he and Yadi's pickoffs, little things, I guess you don't really see that when you don't play with the guy and you don't see him every day. But when I got over there, man, my appreciation level for his all around game, took even another step up, outside of pretty much getting a hit almost what seemed like every time. And, you know, I immediately stepped into huge situations every game because they were walking him. And, you know, that was a pretty unique opportunity to bat behind. So and that goes, you know, that's just on the field. Albert's obviously done amazing things for the communities that he's played in, for the Dominican Republic, for the Down syndrome community. Those are all the things, you know, away from the field that he's done that have been unbelievable. And I've got an opportunity to be part of his foundation and doing some different things, and to see all the tremendous work they've done is also one of the things that I think people should appreciate about Albert.
I want to go back again, but I also want to let my son is on the line. He's dying to ask you a question, so I'm gonna let him do it. His name's Braden. He's 15. He's probably mad at me because I've had him on mute the entire time because he likes to make a lot of background noise. Braden, if you are still there, now is the time, buddy.
Hey, man. How you doing?
Good, bud. How are you?
I'm doing good. One of my questions was, back when you hit your last home run as a Cardinal, you probably get this question a lot, but take me through that moment. Like, how did that feel? Everything that was going on, the fans, your teammates, you know, just everything that went on. How'd that moment feel?
Yeah, you know, so that whole thing happened kind of oddly. You know, I was dealing with a broken thumb. I hadn't played. I was trying to get back. We were still in the playoff race. My thumb wasn't healing as fast as I'd hoped. I ended up having the screw put in it, thinking that that would speed up the process. And it maybe did a little bit. But as I realized that, you know, this was probably it for this season. I wasn't going to get to play any more that season. And I was kind of down to, just kind of curious if the Cardinals were considering picking up my option. So I asked Mo, who obviously Mo and I have had a long relationship and a good relationship and a friendship, very candidly, if you know, if they were going to pick up my option, or if, you know, if this was going to be it, I would have liked to have said my sort of goodbyes to a lot of people in the organization, that you probably won't see face to face, maybe ever again. It's just like one of those deals. It's very weird. You go from seeing people every day, for 7 years, to maybe never again, because just, you know, life move on. And I don't live in St. Louis. And so now I'm, you know, so I wanted to say, you know, sort of my goodbyes in a personal level to some of the, you know, clubhouse people and the people that have done a lot for me. And so Mo had said, yeah, you know, more than likely we're not going to pick up your option. And then it kind of turned into, well, we want to recognize you and as, you know, what you've, you know, been part of the last 7 years. And then I said, okay, yeah, you know, that'd be great. But, and they said, Mike said, well, I'd like to get you in at bat. And I said, well, you know, we're still in the middle of the hunt for a playoff spot. And I don't want to in any way jeopardize it. So if it doesn't happen, I don't need that, you know, sort of, you know, moment. I've had a lot of moments in St. Louis. I'm not looking to try to get another moment just for my satisfaction. And so basically Mike said, no, I'm going to try to get you at a bat. So that night they activated me because it was September. We had a 40-man roster spot. It wasn't a big deal to activate a guy on the DL. So they activated me and I think they'd put some maybe on the board or something. But then, so he tells me, I think it was the seventh inning and, we were ahead, I think, six to, I don't remember the exact score. But basically he says, hey, you're leading off the inning. And I was like, oh man. So I go down to the cage and like I said, I hadn't really hit in a couple of days cause I'd realized that I wasn't going to be able to play. And so I said, well, I better get some swings in so I don't embarrass myself. And went down to the cage and got a few swings in. And then next thing you know, I'm in the batter's box and the crowd's going crazy. And I got tears in my eyes as they're putting a cool graphic on the board. and everybody's standing and teammates are standing and, you know, the tears are coming and I get in the box and I said, you know, I've been here 1,000 times, just kind of try to treat this, you know, get in here and compete. And quickly I'm 0-2 and I'm thinking, oh man, don't strike out in this situation. You know, this is, this would be, not a great ending to my time, you know, at Busch Stadium. And, you know, like I said, it was a divine moment. I felt like God had given me this moment. A guy throws me a breaking ball and I hit it. And you know, it clears the right field. I'm going, just be a double, you know, be a hit. And it clears the wall and just kind of the roar of the crowd and the cheering. And I almost feel like I kind of floated around the bases and, with tears in my eyes floating around the bases, very surreal. I guess Hollywood type moment, you know, like a movie type feeling of, that God had given me a kind of a closing moment in St. Louis. And for my, you know, just long time there, that was really a cool, feeling coming around third base. And Matt Carpenter and Yadi are there. And then obviously Adam and Mike Matheny are at the top of the step. And to kind of share that moment with some men that I spent a lot of time with, grinded through a lot of seasons and games with. And, you know, it was just a very emotional, very, like I said, it was very divine, feeling of man, thank God for this opportunity and this moment. And it was pretty cool. And then Mike says, you know, we're still in the hunt. And if, you know, that was a pretty good swing. So if I got a chance to put you in tomorrow, will you hit? I was like, yeah, sure. And I ended up getting another at bat, but I think, you know, obviously that moment, kind of signifies the end of my Cardinals career. And is one that stands out to me as very, very special. And, you know, Dan McLaughlin, like to hear the playback and the excitement in his voice, and then they pan the dugout and the excitement of your teammates is, I guess as an athlete, you know, when your teammates are excited for you and you feel like you were a good teammate, I think that's the most important thing, and that you treated people the right way and that they were excited for me and just kind of to see their reaction was just as impactful, maybe as the result.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Matt. I've always wondered kind of what goes through somebody's mind. And I would love at some point in time, if I can ever talk to Albert, his return to St. Louis last year, mm-hmm. and hitting that home run, you know, it just kind of brings us back to the hundreds of times that he had done that before, but it was really cool to hear. But thank you for sharing that. And speaking of Dan McLaughlin, I had talked to him a couple years ago, and one of his favorite moments of all time, and he's called Cardinal games for 20 plus years. His favorite moment was this one, and it was your home run there. But I've got a clip from that interview.
Here he is coming up with a plate appearance, and you know, he hadn't had a rehab, he hadn't seen anything, and he hits this home run, and I get goosebumps now thinking about it. And the reason that it's my favorite is that I know Matt as a human being and not just a baseball player. He is what you want everybody in professional sports to be like. I knew about many of the hospital visits after games that went unannounced with no cameras, no fanfare, no writer, nothing. He did that stuff all the time to go visit sick kids and donate a lot of his time and his money to that. So I saw that, and I saw more than what the fan would see. So for me, it was an emotional call because I just was so happy for him. And the tears were coming down his face. He knew that this could be it for him. And at that point, you know, you don't know if another team wants you too. So, you know, you don't know if this is it forever. And so that's why, and hopefully I'm not rambling on too much, but that's why that is my favorite call. He meant so much to the Cardinals and the city and what he did in charitable works that I just was really excited for him. And it's one of the great moments I've ever seen in sports.
Yeah, that was Danny Mac's interview I had with him back in 2018. He was asked the question what his favorite moment was. And, you know, they've had all kinds of great moments. They've had a World Series title, several division championships. But, you know, he went to that one right away. No hesitation whatsoever. But, yeah, that was Danny Mac. Another Cardinals sideline personality I had talked to in the past. We love him. We love the cat. But he was boasting on a show I did a few years ago about how he's a huggable guy. I mean,
I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I'm a huggable guy. I mean, look at me, I'm huggable.
So I'm in the process now, Matt, of vetting out this claim, and I'm going to start with you. Is that true?
I mean, he's small in stature. So, you know, when he's watching his diet a little closer, he's more huggable. There's times when it might be a little challenging to get your arms around him. I tell him all the time, you know, you're not a spring chicken, Jim. You know, you need to take care of yourself. You got a young son, you know. And so, huggable, I don't know. I like to hug him. I don't know. Maybe me and his wife outside of that, I don't know how many people would want to hug Jim.
Yeah. He claimed you were one of them, and I've got a clip of that too.
Holiday really wanted that Yankee hug. Yeah. I had to let him, do it.
So, nothing, he appears, the most uncomfortable I ever see the cat is when, a former Cardinal player is in a different uniform and approaches him for a hug. You can see it in his face. There's a little bit of fear there. He's afraid of the criticism. You're not wearing Cardinal red anymore. But take us back to that. And is that what players prey on? Yeah, he might be huggable, but, is it more like you want to create that little bit of anxiety in him?
You know, Jim's fun to mess with, and he's awesome. He's one of my good friends, and he used to ask me for interviews, and I like to make him uncomfortable, just because I like to watch him squirm a little bit, and I would tell other guys not to do interviews with him in front of him, and he'd get all upset. So he's just one of those guys that takes it well. He's funny, and you know, he's trying to do his job, which is to get interviews, and I used to like try to ruin that for him. So. any chance I could get to make it uncomfortable for him or awkward for him or, you know, just make his job a little bit harder, I was willing to take that opportunity. And then, I like to make it weird for him and try to hug him all the time on the broadcast. And, you know, we had one of those relationships where, you know, we hugged a lot, and he's good people. I tell him all the time, I'm starting to see this young lady on the telecast. They're phasing him out. So we'll see how long he can last.
Oh, that's great. I want to go back to 2011. Obviously you guys, there was a bit of a struggle just from a fan's perspective, the first of the year. And then there was a point in August, I think the Cardinals were in double digits behind, out of the playoff picture. What changed that year? I talked to Ryan Terrio in the past about what he saw too, as one of your former teammates. But through your eyes, what changed about that team? We know there was a big trade with Toronto, yeah. Still it didn't take off right away. So what was it from your perspective?
You know, I think it was a talented team. Obviously, start out in spring training, you lose Waino. Waino has Tommy John surgery. So that's kind of a big kick in the gut when you lose your sort of 1A, 1B ace with Ian Karp. So immediately, you know, you lose a 20-game winner in the start of spring training. So I think, like I said, that was a bit, you know, I think that hurts the morale a little bit. But I think that team was so talented. It seemed like, you know, to me at least, as I look back on it, we had a hard time putting all three phases of the game together. There'd be times where we were pitching really well and we wouldn't be scoring, and there'd be times when we were scoring a lot of runs and our pitching would blow it late, or, you know, the starters would be getting us in a hole early. We had a hard time kind of just tying it all together, and I think it took us a while to get it going. And, you know, I think the trade, sometimes it kind of just reinvigorates the team a little bit, new blood, kind of a new excitement. So I think that helped. But I think ultimately we just started playing better as far as we found ways to win, which I think early on in the season we were finding ways to lose. And, you know, I don't think there was any magic potion. That team was plenty talented from the very beginning to win a World Series. But we finally, you know, like that was a great group of guys, like the character and, you know, even if we wouldn't have ended up not winning the World Series, it was a fun group. It was a lot of guys with funny personalities. You loved coming to work every day. There was always something going on. Our bench players were really good at keeping the everyday players up and keeping the morale high. And I have all kinds of stories about bus rides and plane trips and just a really fun group of guys. But I think from a wins and losses standpoint, it just took a little while for us to kind of click and on all three areas of the game. And like I said, the trade, I think, helped. But I also think that, you know, we just kind of put it all together.
Yeah. So, you know, that playoff run was incredible. It was my first year, actually. I'm from nearby St. Louis, but I moved out to Charlotte, North Carolina back in 2011. So I had to watch it from afar. But wow, the game six, what a strange game, just watching it from a fan's perspective. It was kind of a sloppy game the first half. And then late in the game, it happened, right? Where, you know, David Freese just had two unbelievable at bats. Just take us back to that moment. I just, you know, being one strike away from losing in game six on two occasions I can't imagine how you guys felt, but I know I was on my knees in the living room, you know.
I mean, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, baseball's crazy and two great teams are playing a sloppy game, like you said, and then it turns out to be, you know, one of the greatest games in MLB history. But yeah, I mean, like you said, David came up with a couple of huge at bats. Lance comes up with a huge at bat, and the guys in front of him, Daniel Descalzo, comes in late and gets two hits. I think John Jay may have came in,
yeah, John
got
Jay
two
did,
hits.
Yep.
I'm, you know, recalling it, but you know, just some unsung heroes also, the getting on base, making things happen. And then David, obviously the huge triple and then the walk off homer. And huge situations. And it was, you know, what's crazy is he grew up in St. Louis and gets a chance to have those kind of moments in a World Series in St. Louis. And, you know, you remember when, you know, you watch it back, you see kind of the emotions of the Rangers and even Nolan Ryan and some of the, just the ups and downs that they felt, mm-hmm. along with the ups and downs that we felt, an amazing series and just, two pretty equally talented teams. And like I said, thankfully it ended up going our way, but that was the World Series in general, like the world, you know, the playoff baseball and particularly the World Series from a player standpoint, emotionally, it's like playing five or six games in the regular season. I mean, every pitch and every play is so important that by the end of the game, you're just gassed, like from an emotional standpoint of just knowing, I guess, how important every play is and then the tax that it takes on you emotionally and physically. And to play, you know, seven games at the end of that deal, you're really just, it's amazing how emotionally, you know, a whole playoff run through game seven of the World Series can be, as far as that goes. But, yeah, it was, tremendous series and you know, you get to have the parade, pretty awesome. The ring, I tell people all the time, the ring is awesome. It's a symbol, but it's the memories and stories that you have from that year. I think that the guys and you know, we still talk about stuff that happened that year that, you know, to this day.
You know, speaking of being on the edge of your seat, I think on pins and needles, how draining was game five of the division series against the Phillies? Cause that was a very tight game. You have Chris Carpenter on the mound. Yeah. You know, we all miss that guy. Like we miss you. But tell us about what that was like watching that from left field and seeing that game progress. Like how, gosh, you had to be, it was a slim lead.
Same thing. Yeah. So I just remember kind of the intensity in the locker room going into game five in Philadelphia. They had an amazing team that year. We're going up against Roy Halladay, who is kind of in the prime of his career, knowing that it's going to be very difficult to score, you know, off of him. And then we have Carp and that they're old friends and old teammates. That it was just really kind of a really cool narrative going into that game of game five, two good friends facing off. But as his hitters, you know, it's going to be a very good challenge to try to score off Roy Halladay in his prime. I think Skip gets us on the board early in the first inning and you think, well, maybe we are going to score some runs. And then, you know, Roy just kind of locked it down and they went blow for blow for nine innings. And like you said, once it's a one run lead, you know, the intensity of that game, that every pitch and that ballpark, mm-hmm. you know, as far as you're just all, you know, big, strong dude, they had a bunch of them. If they touch it, you know, on the barrel, it's a homer. And it's tied, or you know, if they get somebody on first and they get a bloop and a blast, you know, you're behind. So you factor in the tiny ballpark and what could happen, the emotions of that when you get the final out of, oh my gosh, finally it's over, you know, and you can kind of get off pins and needles. You know, it's like you're out there and you know, you as an offense, you know, you're trying to score that extra kind of insurance run that would give us a little breathing room. We couldn't get it. And for Chris, you know, Carps, I tell people all the time, when you're talking about competitors and kind of just bad men, you know, as far as in a good way, like guys on the mound that are just, you feel so good about because he's competing his butt off and just, you know, he put in the work and, you know, he and Wayno both, but anyway, so, you know, you just watching him work and then that ground ball and the celebration on the mound, was really cool. Like I said, I think they may have won 100 games that year. They were kind of the favorite to win and to beat them in their house in game five with their ace on the hill, was another, one of my favorite memories of playing baseball.
Tell us about the, you know, when you guys made the playoffs on that very last day, I think you guys were in Houston. And I know, speaking to Ryan Terry about this, because, you know, he only signed a 1-year deal. I think he had moved most of his stuff out of St. Louis at that point. I think a lot of teammates might have felt like, okay, this is a tough ask to get in being behind. But tell us about being in that locker room watching Atlanta on the TV, watching that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think we finished early. Carp threw another gem. I think if I remember correctly, it was about an hour and a half game. Right. He was diced and sliced the Astros and we had to wait and there was nowhere for us to go. And you know, kind of had to watch that game. And if I remember correctly, it was an East Coast game, so it should have been over, but it was a longer game. I think it was maybe extra innings or,
I think it was, yeah.
Have to draw, you know, so all of a sudden, you know, we're waiting, we're all hanging out in our uniforms because you don't want to put your nice clothes on if you get to spray champagne all over each other. So I just remember kind of everybody huddled around a bunch of different TVs and it just kept going what seemed like for a while. And you know, just the excitement of getting to celebrate, you know, like you said, what was a culmination of what looked like no chance of getting into the playoffs, you know, to all of a sudden you're in, is pretty exciting, especially with that group of guys. You know, like I said, we had a really fun team, a bond, you know, to get a chance to play some more baseball together. I remember everyone was thrilled and ecstatic. And I remember, you know, there was pretty intense celebration, pretty intense group of guys as far as celebrating goes. And we had picked up a lot of veterans and it was pretty exciting. And I think we probably ruined the carpet in the Astros visiting team locker room. They probably had to recarpet that place after we left, but those are fun, man. Those are when after you grind for 162 games, to know that your work has got you more baseball is pretty satisfying.
A couple questions I've got here on Twitter I was going to throw your way. Tell us a little bit about Table 40.
Yeah. So my wife and I started a podcast, in the pandemic. We were kind of just, you know, obviously like everyone else, kind of stuck in the house. And our faith is very important to both of us. We are on the board at a pro athlete outreach PAO, and they have Sports Spectrum and they own that. And we kind of just, my wife more than anything was wanting to do a podcast and Table 40 basically comes from, kind of the idea that over my 20 years of playing baseball, we had a lot of cool conversations around tables and we like to have people over and have dinner. And we were kind of the hospitable. We like to host people. We like to invite teammates and have team parties and have people over. And then we spent a lot of time at dinners and talking about life. So that's kind of where the table comes from. And then 40 comes from Psalm 40, which is kind of talking about how Jesus picks us up and puts us on a firm foundation kind of the salvation piece of being a Christian. So that's Table 40 podcast. You know, we're trying to cover a lot of different areas. We started out a lot with, you know, kind of my Cardinal teammates and some of those things, but we had Ben Roethlisberger on a couple of weeks ago you know, we've had some really awesome guests. We've had some people, my financial advisor. So we've kind of tried to make it a little bit diverse in who our guests are. And Jack Flaherty a couple weeks ago was great. And try to aim some of them at a younger audience, maybe some high school kid age kids and kind of some Jack Flaherty and some Ben Roethlisberger and what their high school careers look like, Nolan Arenado. And so it's been fun, man. It's really been cool. We've had a really good feedback of a lot of age kids, you know, from high school kids, my son's age to former teammates, to just friends. It's been pretty neat. I feel like God has allowed us to have some cool interviews. And so it's been a way for us to, you know, it's supposedly like casual conversations about Jesus and sports and youth sports and leadership. So I feel like it's going well. I think we've done 10 or maybe 12 of them, and it's been neat. And we're not pros, and so it's not real perfectly put together. It's my wife and I basically having cool conversations, hopefully with athletes and other interesting people.
That's pretty incredible. And my wife won't get near this microphone. She won't get near a camera. In fact, she left the house because she's petrified her voice will be somehow be captured on here, I guess. But no, that's awesome. We'll have to check out that podcast called Table 40. What's in the future for Matt Holliday? We had a question here. Would you ever consider joining a broadcast booth or coaching perhaps in the future? But what do you envision happening? Or is it are you kind of the coaching at the college level with your brother? Is that where you see yourself in the near future?
I think in the near future, yes, because, you know, as a major league player, you spend hours, you spend long hours away from your family, from the travel mm-hmm. to just being at the field doing your work, you know, from 2 o'clock until 11 o'clock. And I missed out on a lot of stuff with my kids, particularly, you know, the older one. So this has been a really cool transition where I'm still around baseball with the college, but I've gotten a chance to help with his teams and be around the family a lot more. And, you know, when you jump into pro coaching or you jump into even broadcasting, there's travel and, you know, maybe not right now, but you know, in general, usually, it's a lot of travel and it's a long hours. So I think right now I'm pretty comfortable with what I'm doing. Would I love to be part of the Cardinals organization someday in some capacity doing something? Yes. When that will be, I'm not sure. I'm going to hope that God will help me with the timing of what is next for me and what is my purpose moving forward and how do I satisfy, you know, having purpose and having, you know, that competitive vibe in my soul that I don't think you ever lose, you know, just cause you stop playing baseball doesn't mean you somehow aren't competitive anymore or have something to offer to the, you know, I like to compete and I like to help people. Yeah, I guess to answer your question, I'm not quite sure. I think right now doing what I'm doing is a good fit. And maybe someday when the kids get a little bit older, could I see myself in some capacity with the Cardinals? Absolutely. So, like I said, it'll have to be, you know, that's kind of a TBD type of answer, I guess. But I watch the Cardinals games every night. Obviously I love Danny Mac and Jim, the Cat and the other guys, you know, they do a good job. The color analysts they have. So I'm tuned in, you know, pretty much every night when I'm not, you know, with my son.
Yeah. And I could certainly understand that as a father of four myself. I have, some of them are very young, a 4, 7, and 9 year old. Almost have to like think mm-hmm. about that daily. Like what are their ages again? But and then I've got my son on the line here. He's 15. So I can certainly understand not choosing to do something that's going to take, you know, more time away from the family, especially when they're so young, which, you know, if you look at somebody like Willie McGee, who's now come back into baseball mm-hmm. once his kids grew up, now he's a coach. And well, I tell you, as much as I'd love to see you in back in a Cardinal uniform and in the organization in some way, shape or form, seeing a guy like Willie McGee put the uniform on again. I mean, there's something about that just, you know, he's aged pretty well. He almost looks like he could go out there at least for pinch running duty again.
Willie's great. Yeah.
So, Matt, I want to thank you so much for giving us some of your time this morning. It is it's great to be able to talk to you and be able to go through your experience as a Cardinal and just, you know, as a baseball player in general, what you're up to these days. So we want to thank you for your time.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to connect with you or follow you out there, where can they go to?
I think my Twitter handle is Matt Holiday OSU. It's pretty easy to find, I think. Yeah, and then the Table 40, I always post about. I'm on Instagram, too. I have a blue check mark, so don't follow any of the fake ones. But, yeah, I have Instagram. I think it's Matt Holiday OSU maybe, too. Anyway, yeah, so I always post the Table 40 stuff on there. You can get the podcast on Amazon or on Apple or anywhere you find a podcast. It's Table 40 if you spell it out, T-A-B-L-E-F-O-R-T-Y. So it's not the number 40. Okay. You spell it out. I mean, you can find it. It's pretty easy to find. But, yeah, I'm on Twitter, and I don't post a ton, but I do put some stuff on there as far as for the podcast and some baseball stuff. But, yeah, that's where I'm at.
All right. Well, once again, Matt, thank you so much. And Braden, I'll let you say goodbye. He's been patiently waiting. He's going to be ticked at me. I've got a mute button on this thing for a reason.
It was good talking to you. Best luck in the future with whatever you do, if you ever go back to coaching or the broadcast booth. But if you do ever go back in the broadcast booth in 20 years or however long, that is one of my dreams, to be a Cardinals broadcaster. So maybe in the future, if you decide to do that, maybe we could be in the booth together.
There we go. Now we're talking. Yeah, well, I appreciate you guys having me on. Yeah, maybe someday we'll call a game together. That'd be pretty cool.
Yep, he's working the angle already. So,
yes.
Matt, you have a great day, and stay safe. And hopefully sometime down the road we can connect again.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot.
All right, see ya.
All right, that was Matt Holiday joining us right here on Two Birds on a Bat on Ruffled Feathers. What a great thing on day before opening day to catch up with a former player, and especially a player that's meant so much to the Cardinals. He was a great Cardinal. He really was. And, you know, as fans, we like to, you know, we don't forget many of the players who have put on that uniform. He is one of those, at least as far as the time I've grown up and paid attention to Cardinal baseball, that's a name that is going to be one of my top five of guys. I just remember being kind of like a core player, a cornerstone player. He was definitely one of those. And so great to hear from him on his first experiences as a Cardinal, all the way back to the trade, to the World Series, to his last at bat. So we got to cover some really good ground with him today. So just want to thank him for his time once again. Opening day's tomorrow. I'll be definitely watching baseball today, even though the Cardinals aren't playing. But I can't wait. Gosh, one more day. And this is the longest we've gone, folks. And since I don't know how far we'd have to go back, but this is the longest that the country has been without baseball for a very long time. And it's happening today, starting today. And then it really starts for us tomorrow as the Cardinals welcome the Pirates to Busch Stadium. Before we get out of here, just want to take a moment to thank our featured partner, starting with Mike and his wonderful crew at Adams Smokehouse, located on Watson Road. Adams is home to the best barbecue in St. Louis. They do big box orders, catering, and of course, in-house dining. If you want the full experience, head on down to Adams Smokehouse, meet Mike and the gang. Decide from their awesome menu, you are not going to be disappointed. That's our friends at Adams Smokehouse, St. Louis. Here's your cue. Make sure to check out our friend, KristenJacobs.com. Dr. Kristen Jacobs would like to remind everyone that every day is Skin Cancer Awareness Day. Make sure to check out her Ooh La La Spa Anti-Aging and Wellness Center. That's our good friend, Dr. Kristen Jacobs. And finally, don't forget our friends at Gators Baseball Academy, located in both Missouri and Illinois. If you're looking for the right organization to help your youngster with the game of baseball or softball, look no further than Gators Baseball Academy and their four-pillar system. To learn more, check them out at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. All right, you can find us when you're not listening to us right here. You can find us at TwoBirdsOnABat.com. Please click subscribe to the podcast. It takes 30 seconds. Best of all, it's free. We're located on Twitter at Birds on a Bat Show. You can find us on Facebook by searching Two Birds on a Bat. Like our page and share it. On Instagram, you can find us at Two Birds on a Bat Show. You can also find us on lineupmediagroup.fm, home of Yo Radio, the newest streaming platform for your mobile device. Download it for free today. All right, folks, one day left. Thank goodness. And until next time, for all of us here at Two Birds on a Bat, let's go, Birds!